This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we have one sponsor for the show, and that's our good friends at Jamf Software, makers of Jamf Pro and Jamf Now MDM solutions, and we'll tell you more about those as the show goes on. Bradley, how are you doing?
Beautiful day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are 3 weeks from the end of school, so we're rocking and rolling. Beautiful weather here in Chattanooga, and so got some fun topics to talk about tonight. Mm-hmm. The last one, the main topic, we'll be imagining what iCloud for Schools would look like, and so I think that'll be a fun show. Mm-hmm. But first, you have some Team Drive follow up.
Yeah, we started using some Google Team Drive stuff, and it seems to be working pretty well overall. It has a couple of caveats though, which I just wanted to mention. You know, if you create files in a Team Drive, it basically works the same as Drive, right? So for the stuff that you set up in there, it's fine. The migration process is a little unusual though, because what happens, it seems like, see, you can drag a folder into a Team Drive or move a folder into a Team Drive, but it seems that there's some kind of migration process that happens, so it's not as quick as if you moved a folder between two Drive folders. That has, you know, typically been instantaneous, more or less, whereas this seems to take a little bit of time to move over to a Team Drive. So that's something to be aware of, and it caught out a couple of people who were expecting the folder to be in one place, and then at one point it was there, and then it migrated, and then it was gone. So if you kind of do it, you know, maybe overnight or offline or something, when over the weekend or something, it's okay. But doing it during the school day, as I did, was not the best idea. So just be aware of that. But the thing that really caught us out was that the iOS extension doesn't support it. So if you have the Google Drive app installed on your iPad or your phone, and you want to save a file into Google Drive, and you do that with the ShareSheet extension, you cannot see your Team Drives in the extension, at least of the current version at the time we're recording. So that's a wee bit of a limitation. I mean, what you can do is you can upload the file to your personal drive and then move it into a Team Drive folder, but that requires, you know, you upload the file first and then you go into your Google Drive app and then you migrate it by hand. So it's a bit of a pain, comparatively speaking, but it is possible to do. But working with the files in the app itself is just the same, exactly the same as it would be if it was on your own personal drive. So,
and it still doesn't work with the Mac Google Drive app as well. They're just basically, yeah, those things are just not existent. And, you know, that's one of the kickers with things that hook into the file system natively, like Dropbox, OneDrive, and Google Drive, is like when they add these features on top of them, they, you know, it's like sometimes difficult to bring those down locally when you have to mix in to the local file system. It's like it's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah, it doesn't always make exact sense. Yeah, I mean, what are they going to do? Show the Team Drives as like an extra drive or something? That's starting to get reasonably complicated, and how do you represent that in one folder and so on. So yeah, if you rely on desktop sync as well, that's something to bear in mind as well. What else is going on? We had our first digital exams today, and that we have survived. I always have this kind of I kind of fear of doing digital exams. I don't know what it is, but I think partly what it is that if something goes wrong with the computer, then basically you have to apply the same rules to that situation as if the school had burned down during the exam, right? They have these kind of emergency situation rules. And if you have a technical problem with the computer, then you're supposed to apply those rules as well. So I'm kind of like, well, the school burning down is pretty unlikely during an exam, but something going on with the computer may be more likely. So, but I mean, we've been doing this for a few years now and we haven't had any issues yet. So it's, yeah, so far so good. We changed to using Microsoft Word this year on iOS, which is great because the exam papers or the files that the students type their answers in, if it's an essay exam, that's just a Word template that comes from the exam board, and we can just load that onto the app and ready to go. So just out of interest, Bradley, the way we're setting this up is we're enrolling the devices in MDM. Our MDM server is pushing an exam configuration, and it's pushing an install of Word. And then what we do is we use Apple Configurator just to, because Wi-Fi is basically turned off on the device entirely, we just use Apple Configurator to load the file right into the Word sandbox by using, connect it to Configurator and then do add files. And you can put it right into an individual app sandbox, which is really cool. And then we have Wi-Fi completely off, so there's no networking turned on at all. We turn on gated access to keep the student in Word. And then when it comes to printing, what we do is we're providing the Ethernet adapter that we talked about the other week and printing via that. So at the end of the exam, students just plug the lightning cable into their iPad, press print from inside Word, and they're using AirPrint, but they're using it over a wire, kind of ironically. So we did that today. Three students went through that today, and that worked out just fine. So, yep, that's my new procedure so far.
Before we move on, let's thank our sponsor for tonight. It's the great folks at Jamf. Jamf Pro is the solution for deploying, managing, and securing Apple devices. They have over 3 million students using Jamf every day. You can bring learning to a whole new level for your students by providing the tools they need to be successful in today's classrooms. Start a free trial of Jamf at jamf.com. That's JAMF.com. So you and I were talking via iMessage today, and it looks like you are thinking through a new network.
Yeah,
overall.
I think it's I've kind of mentioned it before a couple of times that there are some dark things in the switch cupboard that I think need to be fixed. So we started having some conversations today with a couple of very early kind of pre-sales conversations about what's available and what's a good idea. Primarily looking at the switching and the kind of the backbone stuff, because all that stuff was laid down in a day when we had desktop computers and we had Ethernet going to classrooms and so on. Now, we've still got Ethernet, of course, because we've got our access points all over, but I think it's time to have maybe rethink of that and see, do we want to recable for the next 10 years? A lot of that stuff is 10 years old or more. Do we want to recable? Do we want to redesign based on an assumption of Wi-Fi and mobility rather than just the addition of it after the fact? And looking at maybe getting some new and some more access points as well. We don't exactly quite have one per classroom right now, but I think it would be quite good to get one per classroom, because although our school's not big, we do hammer the network with a lot of bandwidth, so density and performance are still important aspects for us. So, and of course, now the thing, Bradley, you know more about this than I do, but the fact that we're, as our iPad lease rolls on, we're now on to basically majority 802.11ac capable hardware, but we don't have any access points to support that. So maybe that's something we need to move into as well.
Well, and that's something I've been thinking about as well, is like, how do I, and we have a pretty large network. I mean, I think I have 12, 13 switches, and sadly, the majority of them are unused in terms of like each port, but our building's so spread out. And I was really thinking, like, what would a, you know, we just finished this campus that we acquired, and it really, and it was nice having something fresh. And so I was thinking, why can't I apply that same logic here and rebuild it? Not and pretend there's no existing cabling, because as you mentioned, like, the majority of our devices are Wi-Fi based. And so why don't we just say, okay, let's recable this building. It would take way fewer drops than we currently have, way fewer switches than we currently have, probably the same amount of access points, if not more. And let's, you know, overlay. And I was even thinking of doing ours over like a 2-year project. Like, you know, okay, let's say have someone come in and do a really intensive RF site survey at both of our buildings. And let's determine how we need to get, where are these AP placements? You know, if we're pretending we can put them in the best possible situations, not just where we have cabling, but let's get the best possible throughput, the best possible data rates, and the, you know, the limit cold channel interference, limit adjacent channel interference, and let's really do it right. So, okay, let's do that. And that costs a little bit of money. Got to pay for that. And then, okay, step two is take that information, hand that to a cabling company, and say, run cables for all this. And then, obviously, like, the things that would still hardwire would be like our printers, like our, you know, MFP printers. But outside of that, I would just say, okay, Wi-Fi only everywhere. And that makes the cabling a lot easier, because you're not then having to fish the cables on the wall or put in, you know, those things that hide the cable. You just say, okay, leave the cables in the ceiling. We'll mark where they're at. And then be done. And then what I'd like to do then is say, okay, let's buy, you know, I was even thinking we could probably get away with 6 switches versus 12. Let's get 6 switches, and then let's, you know, get those installed, hook those in. You have this new backbone network that's ready to go. And then you come in one weekend and you just move all the access points from where they're at and mount them in the ceiling, and you light it up and you're good to go. And so, like, you kind of cut over to that. You know, the access points we have are obviously still good. So, like, I mean, they're like less than a year old. So we would just move them from one wired network to the other, and then just pull the other stuff out. You can cut the cabling as much as you can, but just load up in the ceiling. Everything would be nice and labeled. I mean, that's what we're running into now. Some of this cabling is like, you know, 15 years old. Different people have done it. It's not labeled properly. There's, you know, you don't even know where this stuff's going. And obviously I can trace that stuff back, but it's like a real pain. And so just kind of going from scratch. And if I break it out over like 2 years, it's not as big of a cut budget wise.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you also wire an Apple TV as well?
You know, ideally that'd be nice, but then that's just, you know, those, to me, those things end up moving so often. It's like, okay, let's just say unless it's literally a stationary device, like a printer, yeah, let's just go Wi-Fi.
Yeah. See, I'm toying with the idea of possibly just like taking your Apple TVs and just putting them all off the network completely and relying on like Bluetooth discovery and peer-to-peer AirPlay for that kind of thing. I got one new fourth generation Apple TV in the school recently, so I've been testing that in terms of AirPlay performance and stability and just wondering. It seems to be better, but it's hard to tell right now because a lot of kids are off school for exam leave. Just wondering if on a busy network, is the problems with AirPlay to do with like performance on the machine, like the Apple TV itself? Is there a processor problem or something like that? Just experiment with that as well. So maybe that can all get better over time as well. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as well with that whole question. Is, you know, we have our ground floor is quite well cabled. You know, there's drops into every classroom, but then what I have is, because the building's a little awkward to cable, we've got to kind of jump from one end of the building, we kind of go up the outside wall and then into the next floor, and then that goes up and into the next floor. So it's all a bit of a kind of daisy chain, and some of them are, you know, like two floors are contending for the same channel as you go down the wall and things like that. So if we could maybe simplify that a little bit, I think that would be a nice enhancement too.
And that's kind of where the word I was thinking too. It's simplifying your network, and obviously you would have the, you know, you would do all the, you know, the, you would do the VLANs and all that, do that right. But like you're saying, okay, let's pretend there's not any legacy Ethernet cabling, and let's do it. What would we do if we were doing it from scratch? And so, I mean, I know like a lot of our switch ports, there are probably, you know, half a dozen of those aren't going to be used and never going to be used again.
Yeah, I mean, can you see a world in which you go back to desktop computers requiring Ethernet? Very unlikely. Are you going to put in a big server cabinet full of storage on-premise? Absolutely not. It's time to think about the world with cloud and with mobility and with all of those things kind of built into your design, I think.
So had this neat solution I came up with. We have like a access control solution where like obviously you can badge in and out. And there's like a Windows PC that kind of runs the software that we have like literally in a closet. And you can go in there and make new badges and stuff. And that all works fine. Occasionally, the physical controller has to be rebooted. Like it looks like a fire alarm on the wall. It's like a big panel. And it is wired into Ethernet, but like it's like the controller like freaks out. Particularly like if there are storms or the power flickers at all, like it just freaks out. So occasionally, like probably 5 times this year, I've had to like actually reboot that thing. It's like literally unplugging and plugging it back in, and it downloads whatever configs you have, because it's, you know, the doors can store the latest config, but if you like make a change and the controller doesn't see it, it just doesn't change the, you know, it still works what it had. And so I got sick of having to come over here. It always happened like on Saturday morning or something. And it'll be back in the vent here. And so what I did was I bought like 2 Wemos and put, because there's 2 plugs, and just put the things on Wemos. And that way I can just like literally turn them on and off from my phone.
Is it the first Internet of Things solution that I actually have found quite credible as an idea?
Yeah, I mean, it's fantastic. Because like, I mean, honestly, I probably should just like unplug the thing once a week and plug it back in. That would probably help it. But yeah, it's like a Stanley access control system. But it's like, yeah, I can reboot it from my phone. Perfect, easy solution. Tonight I want to talk about like imagining what iCloud or, you know, Apple Cloud for schools would look like. And we say we're not talking about Apple School Manager. We're talking about like a Google Apps type thing for schools, because the thing I've realized is, you know, by talking to schools, even if they're like iPad schools, so it's like, okay, they do iPad and then they're blank. It's like either Office 365 or Google Apps. So there's keeping these competitors, honestly, in a pretty key role in their school. And in some ways, to me, you can make the argument it's easier to change devices than it is to change your backend infrastructure.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
It'd be easier to change to Chromebooks than it would be to change to Office 365. And I know some schools were like run, you know, little Curio mail servers on their campus. I know there's those edge cases, but like we're going to kind of pretend that most schools are running Exchange 365 or Google Apps. And the things with it is, it's not necessarily about the email as much, because obviously email can change, but that, you know, Office 365 and Google Drive become like really essential to school workflows. And so in my opinion, Apple would do well to create an entire software, hardware, and backend stack that would make this experience, you know, more seamless. Because, like, right now, I mean, the thing, you know, Google Drive is used way more at our school than, you know, iWork. Although iWork is fantastic, it's built into every device we have. It's like, oh, hey, what's your Apple ID? I need to share this document with you. That is that whole conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, Bradley, is that Apple just doesn't own identity in schools. You know, and I think this is actually, workflow is important, and you need to have a workflow to get your stuff done. But either Google or Microsoft, they know about being your identity, right? So everybody knows what their email address is. And for us, our email address is your Google login, right? So that's easy. Whereas, what's your managed Apple ID? Well, it's basically that with Apple ID somewhere in the domain name and stuff like that. And but that's not your identity for anything. It's not even the one that you would necessarily like share. Even the teachers aren't on managed Apple IDs, for example, because they're too limited, you know. So, but here's what I know is that Microsoft will fight tooth and nail to keep ownership of that one part. Because basically that's the key thing that Microsoft has got left is identity. And with Active Directory and all that stuff, they really, really, really want to own that. And Google wants to own it too. And that's why, you know, G Suite is such a kind of comprehensive thing. But it all starts with your Google account. And Apple doesn't really have anything like that. And to me, that's something that's really important for them to get.
Yeah, I mean, it would be possible. It's pretty, I mean, you think about it, with the device-based app assignment, you could run an iPad school without ever creating Apple IDs.
Yeah, and many do.
And so, I mean, right now, so I guess, you asked this question, okay, what would you say, what problem is this solving for schools? Well, right now, Apple School Manager, which is A and still in beta, even though it's been out for almost a year, is an extra layer onto your network. But in reality, that should be the starting point for every school. It's our Apple School Manager that you should be able, in my opinion, to start a school, to call Apple and say, hey, we've got our network built. I'm not asking them to, like, obviously do enterprise Wi-Fi and switching, but I'm saying we want to give every student an iPad, every teacher an iPad, or every teacher a Mac, you know, MacBook Air. And that should be the only conversation you have in terms of, like, they should be a one-stop vendor for everything from hardware, software, and, like, your back-end, you know, mm-hmm. identity infrastructure. You know, it doesn't exist now. And I really think by being able to run an iPad school without Apple IDs is fantastic for us. But strategically, I think it's a terrible move for Apple long term, because I think what they've done is they've punted that problem to future Apple problem. But, you know, if you get a school running G Suite and using iPads is a huge, I mean, they're just one bad deployment away from moving to Chromebooks.
Yeah, it's a wide open trapdoor, isn't it, really? Because, you know, as you said, once you've got the back end, you've got the identity there. You know, I could hand out a Chromebook tomorrow and kids could sign in and be working, you know, simple as that. And, you know, to be fair, you could hand out an iPad and kids could be working pretty quickly as well. But the thing is, if there was a significant, like, transition cost away from iPad, which there's really the only thing that exists in that realm right now is iTunes U, right? I mean, as a school, we have a lot of teacher hours invested in creating iTunes U courses, for example. And if we were to transition to Chromebook, for example, I would have to have a story about how you're going to take your iTunes U content with you. And no such story exists at the moment. So that's one bit of lock-in that we have. But if we could get over the hump, say we, over the course of the next few years, adopted, I don't know, Canvas or something like that, then the door would be open for us to move from iOS to anything else that we wanted without a whole lot of difficulty. And of course, Chromebook is just waiting right there for any school that's got G Suite in the back end. So yeah, it's a challenge for Apple. And I think it's something that, you know, once you get your Apple ID, your managed Apple ID, let's say, it serves you, but it doesn't serve you and anybody else at the same time. There's no collaboration element between teachers or students or anything like that that goes through Apple ID. It goes through iTunes U, yes, but that's kind of a different story. It doesn't really, quite frankly, doesn't actually work that well by comparison to something like G Suite.
Because email really still is central to communication for schools and businesses. And so in reality, email and iWork, iTunes U should be all, they should be all one system. And just in the same way, like the Gmail, Google Calendar, and Google Drive is all one system.
Yeah, I mean, you can certainly patch together that kind of capacity with, you know, we get G Suite in the back end, we get iTunes U, all that stuff. But, you know, there's no complete suite of things that Apple delivers to you. They deliver apps, but the apps can be used separate from the ID, and then the collaboration workflow goes where, and, you know, there's a lot of kind of not joined up parts to Apple's back end. Your point is well made.
Yeah, I mean, we're like a school can go in there and say, okay, we're going to create email, calendar, contacts, all that. I mean, yes, you can do some of that through macOS Server.
Yeah. But
I mean, what school is doing that today?
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. And so, I mean, to me, this is even spitballing for the future. Could, like, if this, let's say they built something like this, could the iPads come pre-configured with everything sans like a password? Could I get an iPad that on the box, you know, on the outside of the box was like, say, you know, 4B chambers.
Mm.
And you get it in, it's already got your, you know, it's like, you know, it's somehow, I mean, I'm just imagining how this would work. I don't know if it could work coming off the supply chain, but like imagining your, you know, MDM or your iCloud management system, you've already pre-configured what apps you want on what iPads, and they could literally come from the factory ready to go.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if they could come from the factory. I mean, that's quite challenging, but I suppose you've got something like that with device enrollment. But, you know, the fact is when device enrollment happens in my devices, what lands there is a Google account payload, not an Apple account payload, right? So we have to go through this kind of, I mean, it's weird in that sense because Apple actually has better support for configuring a Google ID on an iPad than they do for configuring an Apple ID on an iPad. Because with a Google ID, you just drop in a configuration profile, the kid puts in their password and you're done. Whereas with an Apple ID, you got to go through as part of the setup process. The kids have got to put in a temporary password, then they've got to change the password. And it's pretty tedious by comparison. Whereas, you know, I can just drop that Google account on there and it's all set up. So, I mean, even Apple's own configuration tools make it easier to drop a Google ID on the device.
And again, and maybe part of this is, and I guess what I'm really boiling down to is built-in email contacts and identity management. You know, because a lot of the pieces were there. It would just be tying it together with hosted email and a hosted CalDAV server and CardDAV server.
Yeah, I mean, those things are there. But what you need to do is it needs to be the case that, like, iCloud for Schools can be the place where your domain name points to and your MX records point to for email. And that's going to take some trust building for people to cut over to an Apple service like that. But there's a whole lot more back-end stuff needs to happen in something like Apple School Manager for any of that to really be possible. So at the moment, as you said, Apple School Manager is kind of like this. It's like an export destination from your G Suite information. It's not something that owns your identity and then that cascades from Apple School Manager to other places. Although they are kind of trying that because you've got things like your MDM server can sync with your Apple School Manager. So there's a kind of beginnings of something there. But what you need is you need the Apple School Manager to sort of present an Active Directory kind of interface where other things can authenticate to Apple School Manager. Use your Apple ID for this. Use your Apple ID for the Wi-Fi. Use your Apple ID for, you know, whatever else it is as well. And that there's a lot of work to be done there. I mean, that's the work of 10 years, Bradley. It's not the work of even one development cycle to get to the situation that you're talking about there.
Yeah, I think that's what that's really the piece that's missing is being able to, you know, change your DNS and point it at Apple. But then you could even think, okay, well then could iCloud Drive get collaboration, like, you know, shared folders in there? Because that currently doesn't exist at all. But then you could even, I mean, that's where all this goes, where, you know, again, you can use Google Drive. Like, you can go sign up for a Google account with your corporate email that doesn't go through Google. And, like, you basically get everything about the email. And you can go in there and share Google Docs with people and all that. And it's like, that's what we're really wanting is, like, for you to say, okay, everybody in my office has iCloud Drive as their document repository.
Yeah.
And so if I share a folder, I know their email. And I know their iCloud, their Apple ID, basically. Instead of their Google ID, it's their Apple ID.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I even have this situation with Apple employees, right? Because for fun, sometimes if people want to see a keynote I've done or something, I'll share it with them using iCloud collaboration. And that basically never works. Because what happens is I share it with their apple.com email address, and then turns out they've got a different email address as their Apple ID, even within Apple. So that it's all, you know, even within Apple, somebody's Apple ID is not actually their ID, or their email address is not their Apple ID. And it's, you know, there's just not really a concept of owning the user's identity in the same way. So, yeah. And I suppose the next question I have, Bradley, is is there a future? Let's say this does happen, right? That we're now pointing our DNS at Apple. We've got a kind of persistent collaborative workflow in iCloud Drive, and Apple owns Apple ID, like actually owns the user identity in your system. Does Apple then follow that up with essentially integrating an MDM into iCloud for Schools? And do you think that would be a sensible next step?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good point. I mean, you just have to ask, like, how much of the stack does Apple want to own? Do they want it to be a one-stop shop? I mean, they do resell Jamf, and obviously one of the pitches is you can use your own MDM. You don't have to use macOS Server, for example. But it is a problem. But then you have also, one of the things I was thinking about is, it's one thing to build this. It's another thing to convince people to sign up for it that have years and years and years invested into G Suite or Office or Exchange 365. And so that's a whole other challenge.
I mean, I think one of the advantages that having a device management system built into that would be for Apple is that they could basically tell the same story that Google tells about Chromebook, which is it requires no administration, right? Because as you and I know, and as listeners to the show know, it's not the case that Chromebooks don't need administration. It's just that the cost of that administration is kind of subsumed in the cost of your general G Suite administration. Because if you do your G Suite, you've got all your application control and stuff set up, then adding Chromebooks is just a thin layer on top of all of that work you've already done. Whereas with iOS, it's like, well, I've got my G Suite administration anyway, I've got all that cost to have email and to have Drive and all that kind of stuff. And then I've also got to go and get an MDM server like Jamf Pro. And then I've got to administer the iOS devices this way, and I administer the services this way. And you ended up sort of doing not quite double the work, but you're certainly doing additional work to do both the back end and the front end. Whereas in principle, if Apple were to come along with something like that as well, you could see a world in which Apple starts to tell the same story as Chromebook, and I suppose to a certain extent Microsoft are trying to tell with Intune and Windows 10S as well, which is that we've got a device management backend and a restricted, limited, customized user experience on the desktop, laptop, tablet, whatever, the two of them work together. And at the moment Apple's kind of saying, well, we've got this great operating system, it has pretty good management hooks, but you're pretty much on your own when it comes to administering it, right? And we've got partners and so on and so on, but there's no Apple tool as such, and Profile Manager simply doesn't count, in my opinion. It's a demonstration tool, really, from my point of view.
But, again, we mentioned this before, you do have problems worldwide. This is not just a U.S. thing. Like, if you've got EU data requirements, so the servers would have to be located in the EU.
Yeah, I mean, the way that people like Microsoft, Google deal with that is that they have data centers in countries in the EU, usually Ireland, but also sometimes other places. And you can sort of go in and say in your management console, I need this data to be, the data from my account has to be in a server inside the EU somewhere, which usually means Ireland, but sometimes means other places as well. And that's something that Apple has kind of... Well, Apple certainly doesn't offer that kind of capability. They kind of hide behind Safe Harbor regulations. And Safe Harbor has had a bit of a ropey time of it in terms of what the EU are saying about the viability of Safe Harbor. Now, nobody's rushing to do anything about it just yet, but I think it's something that I think Apple should really, even whether or not they do any of the stuff they were suggesting, Bradley, Apple do need to step up their game on giving EU companies a lot more assurance about what they're doing with their data as well.
Well, it's something to, I think it would just, at the end of it, it would solve a lot of workflow issues with Apple Schools, because right now it's Apple plus something else.
It is. Now, here's my question to you, Bradley, right? Let's say Apple announces at WWDC this year. How many years is it before you sign up and switch over?
It wouldn't be right away. I mean, That's the kicker. I mean, we're so ingrained in Google, we love it so much. And if I would have to look at it, and to me, it would have to be at least two times better and more integrated than anything else. That's always the kicker with the cost of change. It's not, can't just be as good; it has to be a lot better. And honestly, it had to be free. And we get unlimited storage with Drive, so 5 gigabytes per user for free is not going to cut it.
No, it certainly isn't. But I mean, if you think about G Suite, how many products do you actually use from G Suite, right? As far as I'm concerned, we use Mail and we use Drive. And that's pretty much it, We don't really make a lot of use of any other, I suppose, with docs for teachers, but not really for students at all.
Yeah, I mean, we're email, calendar, contacts, and in the entire drive suite. I mean, our entire budget is planned on Google spreadsheets, and it's really nice. You can like give, you can give permissions for editing down to the per cell on per sheet basis to users. I mean, it's really nice. Just because I don't think I would sign up day one doesn't mean I don't think they should do it. And even if it isn't like the greatest thing in the world, I think even if it doesn't like grow by leaps and bounds, I think it would be worth having. And I think you would see a lot of small schools that don't have a lot of technical expertise jump on it.
I suppose at some level, what it would also do is it would keep Google and Microsoft honest as well. But like I said, and I really believe this, that this is like a 10-year project to get even close, because if you think about it, I mean, how long has G Suite been going? I mean, 10 years at least, you know, as a sort of formal, cohesive product, you know, and Microsoft, maybe not their whole cloud side of things, but certainly as a kind of identity stack, you know, Active Directory and Windows and so on has been around for a lot longer. So I think, you know, if Apple is going to do this and compete realistically, they need to start pretty soon. Even if they do it and, you know, like you and I run it on a fake domain for 5 years until we're sure about it or whatever, I think they need to start pretty soon to think about something like this. And it'd be interesting to know whether they are or not, but I certainly haven't heard nothing. I mean, this is not a show that we've based on rumors or any conversations that we've had. This is just, you know, there's clearly a hole here, and I think it's something that, you know, if I was looking at trying to kind of not just sell Apple solutions to schools, but also to kind of imagine selling them the next generation and the next generation and the next generation of solutions, I would be wanting more of a moat than just Kids Love iPads and Swift Playgrounds. Right? As good as all that stuff is, and I love it, I would be wanting to quote-unquote own a lot more of that school's kind of heart and soul, if you like, and that's something that I think someday Apple should really be paying some attention to over the course of the next couple of years.
It's like you said, owning the identity versus owning the experience. Experiences can change a lot, you know, a lot quicker than identities can. And of course, the funny thing about this is, you know, Apple, sold PowerSchool, a good 20 years ago, 21 years ago. And if they had still owned, I mean, you can imagine, like literally a one-stop solution for your school.
Yeah.
Paying for your tuition with Apple Pay.
Well, wouldn't that be a cool thing, you know, to be able to like take payments with Apple Pay for your school stuff? That'd be fun.
Well, and it's conceivable. That's, you know, we actually technically can, because our photographer uses a website called PixieSet to sell school photos. And she's like, I actually paid for spring pictures yesterday using Apple Pay. So I was like, for the win, full advance.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even necessarily saying this has to be free, you know. I mean, a lot of schools are used to paying a lot of money for this kind of product from Microsoft. Not so much from Google, but from Microsoft. And I think I would be comfortable paying something for that if I knew it was going to be, you know, robust, secure, fully integrated. But I mean, Bradley, it has to be like one button integrated. Do you know what I mean? It has to be way better than what we're doing at the moment, which is pretty good. But, you know, like you said, it's got to be something kind of magic, like an iPad comes off the factory in China and it's basically ready for you as soon as it gets there, you know.
And very much supported day to day.
Yeah, there's got to be like a phone number. I don't know. I'm just trying to imagine like how much better it could be to make me think about that kind of... Maybe this is the calculus Apple's making, you know. It's like, well, we can't do it better enough to get people to switch off G Suite, so maybe we shouldn't bother at all. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that's the easy way out.
It is, and even if they said, well, okay, unlimited storage for schools that are on this, I'd be like, well, is that enough to, you know, rip up everything we've got and switch to Apple backend? I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to have, you know, more of a collaboration workflow using the iWork apps. I mean, I'd love to be using Pages and Keynote and Numbers more than I use the Google Docs apps, but you know, they've done some of the hard parts for that. You've got the collaboration, you've got all that stuff. But, you know, what can you offer me that's beyond all of that? I'm not sure.
Well, if you got any opinions on that, let us know on Twitter or shoot us an email at outofschool.net. We'd love to hear any comments any listeners have about that. Anything else you want to add for this week?
Nothing much. Just looking forward to WWDC. I think it's going to be a very interesting conference. I think that, I mean, what is it, 3 weeks away from the time we're recording this, something like that. So 5th of June, I think, just came out on for the keynote. I think this has got to be a huge release for iPad. You know, iPad really hasn't had a lot of love since iOS 9. And it got a lot of love in iOS 9, don't get me wrong. But I think, you know, you saw the earnings results came out the other day and iPad sales were down yet again. You know, of course, there's a little bit of supply to do with that. I mean, you know, some schools I was talking to just couldn't buy an iPad for like 4 or 5 weeks in the quarter. But even so, iPad needs a shot in the arm. And I think the tech press keep talking about the fact that, you know, new hardware this, new hardware that, but it's not new hardware. It's opening up the device to new use cases and showing people what they can do with the device. I think it's really key. And iOS has really, you know, if you're positioning the iPad as a PC replacement, that's writing a check that iOS 10 cannot cash right now. And I think there's a lot of pressure on iOS 11 to really deliver what I have said on Twitter should be like a life-changing release for iPad users. And I think that's something that I'm looking for at the keynote. I'm looking for, you know, like not necessarily a ground-up rethink of iPad, but certainly the kind of release where people are going to have to relearn quite a lot of the fundamentals of using an iPad to get to another level of productivity. In some ways, iOS 8 and 9 had a little bit of that with things like document providers and split screen, but this has to take that to like the whole next level. So glad I'm not in charge of Apple's product strategy right now, because that's a big challenge. But it's been a couple of years, so maybe they've got some good stuff they're working on. So we'll keep our eyes open for what Apple does at that point.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can find our show notes at outofschool.net. You can subscribe in Apple Podcast or Overcast or Pocket Cast or whatever app you like to use to listen to podcasts. We're in all those major directories. I am on Twitter at Bradley Chambers, and I'm on the web at chambersdaily.com.
Okay, and I'm Fraser Spears on Twitter and spears.org on the web.
Have a good week, everybody.